Czechcast, a podcast in English about Czech and Moravian society, history, culture and economy.
Welcome to another episode of Czechcast, your go-to podcast for all things Czech, from the heart of Europe to the rest of the world. I'm your host, Vít Pohanka, here to navigate the fascinating stories, culture and history of the Czech people and their global footprint. Today we delve into a unique intersection of Czech heritage and American literature, exploring the bonds formed by migration, identity and the pioneering spirit. I'm thrilled to have with us a very special guest, Dr. Evelyn Fanda, Emeritus Professor at Utah State University. Evelyn brings a rich Czecho-Moravian background and a deep understanding of the cultural tapestry that connects the Czech lands to the American plains.
I come from people who came in the early part of the 20th century on my father's side. My grandfather came in 1907 and my grandmother a few years later, and they moved to Minnesota and then ultimately moved to a tiny Czech community in southern Idaho called Buell, and then ultimately moved to my hometown in western Idaho.
Our main subject today revolves around the iconic American author Willa Cather and her novel My Antonia. This seminal work illuminates the lives of Bohemian immigrants in Nebraska in the late 19th century, painting a vivid picture of their struggles, resilience, and the indelible mark that they left on the American landscape.
She believed that immigrants like the Bohemians were actually contributing to America. This wasn't just about them coming to America and getting something out of America, getting land out of America or becoming prosperous. This was also about them contributing to America.
My Antonia is more than just a novel. I believe it is, in a sense, a historical document that reflects the hopes, dreams, and challenges of those who left their homeland behind. Although it is unfortunately virtually unknown in Czechia today, the first Czechoslovak president, Tomáš Garrigue Masaryk, thought it was obviously very significant, and he corresponded with Willa Cather about it.
So he wrote her a letter, and there are letters, a number of letters between the two of them. This was 1922, I think he writes the first letter, and they correspond until about a year before his passing.
So, adjust your volume. Here is your Czechcast with Dr. Evelyn Fanda.
Czechcast, a podcast in English about Czech and Moravian society, history, culture, and economy.
So I am a retired English professor from Utah State University. I taught there for 25 years and got my PhD at Nebraska focusing on Willa Cather. Much of my literary career has been focused on Cather, and lately I've been working on a number of research projects about Willa Cather and her affiliation, her interest in, her curiosity about Czech people, Czech culture, Czech literature, all things Czech.
If you were to explain to the listeners who might never have heard of Willa Cather, who was she and why was she important?
Well, she's actually considered one of the most influential and important writers of American literature of the 20th century. So she's born in 1873 in Virginia on a kind of sheep farm. And then when she's 9 years old, she and her family move to the southern Nebraska, very near the Kansas border, to a little tiny town called Red Cloud. Well, outside of Red Cloud first, and then it's in Webster County. And it was a place that was open to homesteaders. So her father homesteaded for a while. He wasn't very good at that. They moved into Red Cloud. Anyway, so long story short, that opened up an opportunity for her to get to know Czech immigrants. And she was very lonesome for Virginia at first, and she would visit these Czech immigrants, and even if they couldn't speak very much English, she felt this sort of connection to them, and she felt that they gave her a sense of the old world, and At one point, she writes that everything they said, even if they couldn't speak very much English, every word counted for 20. So anyway, so that's been sort of a passion of my life. My mother's name, of course, is Antonia as well, and is a Czech immigrant. So, it was fated to be.
We will probably get to that a little later. Obviously, Willa Cather traveled a lot later on in her life. But by the time she arrived to Nebraska, she hasn't traveled at all outside of the United States. So did she?
No, she hadn't at all. I mean, her family was, relatively, you wouldn't say poor, but certainly not affluent in any kind of way. And that exposure to those immigrant people allowed her to see a world beyond her kind of tiny, small world.
I first learned about the novel My Antonia only when I was in the United States. Funnily enough, even though I studied American literature, I had to pass the final exams at university. I honestly do not remember that we were taught about Willa Cather and about My Antonia. And I just have this kind of memory that I was traveling west, listening to some lectures about the history of the United States and history of the American West, actually. And then I heard about My Antonia, so I immediately bought it and downloaded it on my audiobook application. And then I listened to it while I was traveling through Nebraska towards the west, towards California, towards the mountains. And it was a very strong experience, I have to say. Do you remember when you yourself first time met kind of this book?
Yes. Let me just say that I'm not surprised entirely that you hadn't read Cather in studying literature. My guess is you did Hemingway and Fitzgerald and, sort of the male bunch. And that was kind of my experience, too. I had not read Cather until I went to college. And early in my university years, I grew up on a tiny farm in Idaho and went to Boise State University, And so that was kind of like Cather's experience, too. This was the big place for me. This is the place that opened my eyes. And my professor in a class had us read a short story called Neighbor Rosicki, or Rosicki, as Americans would say. And Neighbor Rosicki is actually kind of a sequel to My Antonia, even though it was the first thing I read. It's this wonderful story about an old man and his family and his memories of living in Bohemia and his desire to make sure that he and his family stay connected to this land in Nebraska. And I loved this story. And I went to my professor and I kind of, meekly, because I felt like I was just some dumb farm girl, I said, these are my people. And it was almost like a confession. It was like, I felt like I'd been posing, like I'd been, pretending that I was a student. And this was the first time that my experience, my kind of background was acknowledged, I felt, in what I'd been reading. And he said, of course, that there's another book, there's a whole novel, and it's called My Antonia. And I said, really? My mother's name is Antonia. And so I was hooked. That was it. I was hooked from then on. And I went on to write a master's thesis on Cather. I wrote a dissertation on Cather years after that at Nebraska. So, she's been with me a long time.
So, Evelyn, how would you kind of outline the story of My Antonia without spoiling it for the listeners who might want to read the book after listening to this episode of Czechast?
It's based on a real story. The woman's name is Annie Sadilac Pavelka, and she actually comes from a little tiny village southeast of Prague, Mijijovice, near Ostrelec. Ostrelec, yes. And she and her family come in 1880. They immigrate to Nebraska, to Webster County, and they are one of about a dozen or so Bohemian immigrants who come to that part of Nebraska at that time. And they happen to be neighbors of Cather. They live basically on the next farm over from where Cather's family first settled. So actually, Cather's first work of fiction was about a bohemian. It was called Peter, and it was published when Cather was the ripe old age of 19. She'd written a story for an English class at Nebraska, where she was at university, and the professor liked it, and he sent it off to a magazine in Boston. And so it was the very first publication that she had, and it was about, the title character is Peter, and he's sort of Cather's first draft of the My Antonia story. It's based on Annie Sadillac Pavelka's father's suicide, and very tragic story. He just gets so depressed by winter that he shoots himself. And it was a story that Cather heard very early when she was in Nebraska, when she came to Nebraska, and was in many ways really profoundly important in her literary growth, that story. And so that's 1892 that's published. Very early. 19 years old. I just can't believe it. 19 years old.
But her career wasn't an instant success, was it?
No, it wasn't. In fact, she worked as a magazine publisher. She was a high school teacher for a while. She was an important publisher, editor in New York for a while. And then she wrote a couple of novels. The first novel is called Alexander's Bridge, which is fairly forgettable because Cather wasn't really writing about anything that she knew. She was imitating other writers. And her second novel is O Pioneers, which is her novel about Nebraska and about pioneers in Nebraska. And even though most people will say it's about the Swedish Alexander Bergson, it is also about a Czech couple. So there's a subplot that is about a Czech couple, Maria Shabata and her husband. And so Cather was right then working on this topic. And O Pioneers did do it was successful. And Cather felt good about it. She said that she'd written it for herself, that she'd written it to remember the immigrants from her past. And she let the country be the hero, just as she said. This is what she actually said. She said, "I let the country be the hero of the story, just like Dvorak had let the country be the hero of New World Symphony." So she connected it right away with that. My Antonia is actually her fourth novel. And that's the one, Song of the Lark got some recognition, but My Antonia really is the first one where she gets a lot of recognition. It remains today one of the most important American novels. I see all the time people writing about it, in the New York Times or whatever, saying, "You need to read My Antonia in the 21st century because," etc. And so it remains a very important novel.
You kind of indicated that, but so why is it important to read My Antonia for someone who wants to understand America, but also how tough the life was for people who were coming from all over the place, but also from Czechia?
It's really important because Cather was really one of the very first people to be writing about immigrants in a sympathetic way. She makes the joke that anyone who'd written about Swedes before then, all they could write about was that Swedes couldn't pronounce the letter J, ja, instead of ja. Or anyway, so Cather was really working to avoid the stereotypes of immigrants. She was looking at them in interesting ways. And remember that she's writing, My Antonia is published in 1918. Right, of course, exactly in the same season, even when Czechoslovakia comes into being. But she's writing about it at a time in America when we are really struggling with issues of immigration. And there's lots of pressure on immigrants to Americanize, to give up their language, to forget their ethnic past in all kinds of ways, to even cook American. Sauerkraut at one point was considered to be something that you wouldn't you wouldn't dare cook, according to the Americanization people. So there was a lot of pressure on these people to become immigrants. And Cather instead sort of takes a different tact. And she writes, in another place, she writes that Bohemian people were people of a very superior type. That's her quote, people of a very superior type. And it was largely because she believed that immigrants like the Bohemians were actually contributing to America. This wasn't just about them coming to America and getting something out of America, getting land out of America or becoming prosperous. This was also about them contributing to America. And she said, this is in an essay called Nebraska, and she said in that she claimed that they had thrift, intelligence, imagination, ingenuity. She said they had sturdy traits of character, an elasticity of mind, and honest attitudes towards the realities of life. And those quotes really are that kind of sense that she believes we benefited as a nation in our nation building by what the immigrants brought with them, the broader sense of the world, this connection to life's realities, good or bad.
You are listening to Czechast today with Dr. Evelyn Fanda, Emeritus Professor at Utah State University, about Villa Cather, her novel My Antonia, and the role immigrants from Bohemia played in settling the American plains.
Do you think that there are some insights that today's reader can gain from the Cather's depiction of Bohemian immigrants in the context of contemporary American society? Obviously, we are hearing about immigrants all the time. And she wrote about immigrants, but in a completely different situation, wasn't it?
Well, you say it's a completely different situation, but, you know, I would argue, and this is one of the reasons I'm researching this, that it really wasn't a completely different situation. That much of what's happening today in our nation, and also I think it's happening in Czechia too, the feeling that immigrants are taking away something. And Cather was vehemently against that idea, that she believed there was something really important about them coming to America and retaining their ethnicity. I mean, this was something that absolutely the Americanist movement said, do not retain your ethnicity at all in any way. And Cather was like, no. She reveled in going to Wilbur, Nebraska, for instance, where she said that, you know, she could go the whole day and not hear an English word. And she could visit beer garden, and she could go to a local theater production where they were doing Czech drama. She believed that it enriched our country and that we needed to acknowledge that. Now, that attitude was pretty unusual, rare for that time period. There were people who were saying that. There's a famous essay in which the writer Randolph Bourne says that, you know, we need to acknowledge that these people have dual citizenships, that just because they still speak in their original language doesn't mean that they're less American. And I think that Cather understood history incredibly well. And she understood European history. And so she knew what it meant for a Bohemian immigrant of that time period to hear someone say, don't speak Czech. She understood how that speaking Czech was so vital, so much a part of national identity for the Czechs, that it you know, that idea that, you know, if you lose the language, you lose yourselves and you lose a country. She understood that. And she lamented, I mean, there were times when politicians in America in 1918, around this time period, 1920s, when they were saying that you couldn't even speak foreign language in a public place. They would try to outlaw it in places like Kansas. Nebraska stopped teaching foreign languages for a while prior to around the First World War. So Cather was really sort of bucking the trend, so to speak. And I think that that's so important in terms of, you know, to circle back to your question, it's also important in looking at, I think, our issues today, that it's not a diminution or it's not taking away from our nation to accept people of other nationalities.
Just for a clarification, what I meant when I said that the situation now is different and the context is different, at least they were coming to become homesteaders. And no matter how hard it was, of course, I mean, to live in the plains at that time, still they were kind of welcome even by the government because they could have the land if they settled it for 5 years, if I'm not wrong. If they tried to improve it, then they would get the title.
And in fact, it's interesting because, of course, there was a push to get immigrants to come to America. We in the cities, we needed laborers in the rising manufacturing levels. And out west, remember that the railroad had been coming across the nation, and railroad companies needed customers, to tell you the truth. I mean, it was economic. They needed people to settle lands next to the railroads. And so they would actually send agents over to then Bohemia to say, come on over. And so once they got here, then there's this other push that says you need to be Americanized. So that shows the economic kind of benefit to America of all immigrants that came at that time period. They were fulfilling a need.
Oh, definitely. Back to the main theme. Willa Cather publishes this book about My Antonia. How was it accepted? I mean, was it an instant success?
It actually was very much recognized as a really important novel. As I said, people weren't writing this kind of stuff. So it was groundbreaking in lots of ways. H.L. Mencken, a very famous critic, said that it was a sudden leap in American literature. That's his term, sudden leap. That it was innovative in a way and was moving American letters to new topics. And it was really the first time that Cather had widespread success. It's also the first time she had real economic success. I mean, she'd been doing okay before then. But the fourth book, My Antonia, was just one that really brought her to the public attention.
You know, what struck me, if we go back to the story of My Antonia, is that there's tragedy, but there's this hope in it, if you understand what I mean. I don't want the listeners who perhaps haven't read the book and are going to read the book, so I don't want to reveal too much. But my reading of the book, or my understanding, mm-hmm. rather, of the story, is that it's overall kind of optimistic.
Absolutely. And that's always whenever I taught it, that was always the impression that students got, is they felt optimistic about this. They thought of this as such as, I don't want to say a sweet story because that suggests a cloying kind of nest, but a warm.
Yeah, it sounds kind of cheap, doesn't it?
It's not cheesy. I mean, it's warm. And it's funny because you're right that if you really look at the plot, I mean, here's my list. There are 3 suicides, 3 murders, an attempted rape, an assault, abandonment, near starvation, betrayal, desperation, greed, annihilation, homelessness, and exile in that book. In other words, it should be a terribly depressing book, but it's not. And part of that is because Cather really focuses on that character of Antonia. And if I may, Veet, can I read like a passage from the end of the book?
Oh, go ahead, please.
This is near the end of the book, and the narrator, who's actually a male narrator, but anyway, the narrator is writing about Antonia. And this is years and years after they've met, years and years after they, you know, this is the end of the novel, near the end of the novel. Antonia had always been one to leave images in the mind that did not fade, that grew stronger with time. In my memory, there was a succession of such pictures fixed there like the old woodcuts of one's first primer. Antonia kicking her bare legs against the sides of my pony when we came home triumphant with our snake. Antonia in her black shawl and fur cap as she stood by her father's grave in the snowstorm. Antonia coming in with her work team along the evening sky. She lent herself to immemorial human attitudes, which we recognize by instinct as universal and true. She had something that which fires the imagination and could stop one's breath for a moment by a look or a gesture that somehow revealed the meaning in common things. She had only to stand in the orchard to put her hand on a little crab tree and look up at the apples to make you feel the goodness of planting and tending and harvesting at last. All the strong things of her heart came out in her body that had been so tireless in serving generous emotions. It's no wonder that her sons stood tall and straight. She was a rich mine of life, like the founder of early races. It's just this gorgeous passage that it's beautiful, isn't it? I mean, and it's not, it's admiration, but
it's not exactly sentimental. It's very moving.
It is very moving. And, you know, I think one of the things that, you know, how does she show the values of the Czechs? And one of the things that she really emphasizes whenever she writes about Bohemians, about Czechs, is that there is a connection to the land that is profound and spiritual and defining. And she admires that.
You are listening to Czechast today with Dr. Evelyn Fanda, Emeritus Professor at Utah State University, about Willa Cather, her novel My Antonia, and the role immigrants from Bohemia played in settling the American plains.
Now, obviously, Willa Cather went on. She even won the Pulitzer Prize, but for a completely different book.
Not quite. There is a Bohemian character in that book. So the book you're referring to is one of ours, which is her World War I novel. And the main character's best friend is a man named Ernest Havel, who is a young man like he is, like Claude Wheeler is. And he plays an important role in that book because he helps Claude see that there is a world out there and that that people are willing to fight wars for things, that there are grand ideas, that there are ideas that are splendid. That's a word that's often used in the novel. So he's an important character in that novel. Sorry, I interrupted you.
No, that's fine. And thank you for that. What was Willa Cather's life like? After she obviously gained some success, she was recognized, she was respected, wasn't she?
She absolutely was. She very much cultivated the idea that she was a fine American novelist. And by that I mean that she was well aware that someone who came from the kind of humble beginnings that she came from, and a woman, that they not necessarily in American letters were necessarily respected. And so she very much worked on cultivating that reputation. And so My Antonia was published by one publisher. She didn't feel like that publisher had done a very good job of promoting the book. And so she switched publishers, for instance. And she did go on to write a number of really important novels. I mean, A Lost Lady, Death Comes for the Archbishop, which is set in New Mexico. Shadows on the Rock, which is set in Quebec. Sapphira and the Slave Girl, which is set in Antebellum South in Virginia. A wide variety of topics. And she was very much recognized. Now, during the 30s, there was a time period when people were saying, oh, she's sentimental and she's nostalgic. Well, they were completely misreading her. Yes, she was writing about the past, but she was writing about the past in ways that were relevant to that time period.
You already indicated, I think, that she was a kind of a trailblazer in the way that she portrayed immigrants, Bohemians, yes, in this case. But she was a trailblazer in many different ways, wasn't she? I mean, because, well, she was a woman, mm-hmm, and she never married. Was she lesbian, you think?
Yes. I mean, she lived with her partner, Edith partner. Lewis, for something like 40 years. Edith Lewis was the executor of her will. They were essentially married in all ways that counted. She certainly wasn't, she didn't hide her relationship with Edith Lewis. In fact, they had parties and they had Friday afternoons when people would come over to their apartment in New York City. But she was also aware that at that time period, if she were to have a literary reputation, that really couldn't be a part of the story that was an emphasis. Edith Lewis is a really important part of her trajectory in her life, and really helped her an awful lot in writing the books. There's one scholar who actually talks about Edith Lewis as being a literary partner in many ways. You know, you can take that or leave that that idea, but it's Cather's position as an important literary figure that I think is something that she cherished and thought a lot about, and that gained her recognition, and that also brought her into contact with all kinds of people, including Thomas Masaryk, whom she had a long correspondence with when he wrote a fan letter about My Antonia.
Okay. Yes. I didn't know about that. I'm sorry about my ignorance.
No, so, not many people know about this. So he wrote her a letter, and there are letters, a number of letters between the two of them. This was 1922, I think he writes the first letter, and they correspond until about a year before his passing, and back and forth. I've been in Prague in the Masaryk archive and seen her letters to him. There's also evidence that there are additional letters that I've never been able to track down between the two of them. She at one point said that she had a bundle of letters from him. Those are not, they don't exist anywhere that we know of. It's clear from the letters themselves that they're talking about things and continuing conversations about literature, etc. So that there are other letters that we just don't have our hands on. Maybe they're at Lanny. I don't know. In fact, there's a New York Times article in which it is portraying him, because of course he was portrayed a lot in 1918 and beyond, that says that he has a photograph of her in his library. I mean, she called this one of the most important associations of her life, of her literary career, this conversation back and forth with Masaryk.
To put it in the context again, I mean, in the last decade of the 19th century, there was Antonín Dvořák, mm-hmm, obviously, who kind of introduced, who was a famous, mm-hmm, Czech, spending some time in New York and writing, yes, the World Symphony, which was a great success. Then we would have Tomáš Masaryk, but I would think that he was better known to some politicians or people who were somehow connected with Bohemia and later on with Czechoslovakia. And here was Bill Cather, who wrote about Bohemians. Yeah. And I just wonder, I mean, what kind of perception would American readers get of Czechia, well, which was then Czechoslovakia, newly independent state, and the Czech culture?
You know, I think that Cather was well aware of what the general public thought about immigrants and thought about immigrants, for instance, from Eastern Europe at that time period. And the thing that you're making me think about is actually a passage in My Antonia, a scene in My Antonia where it's their first winter and the family is really in dire straits and they're living in a dugout, basically a home under the earth. And the narrator and his grandmother go to visit them in this hovel. It's a terrible place and it's dirty and it's cold and they're practically starving.
I think in Czech we use the word zemlyanka, which is from Russian actually. And that's exactly what it is. It's a dugout. It's a hole in the ground, isn't it? Just covered with...
I mean, Cather calls it a badger hole at one point in this passage. Anyway, as they are leaving, Antonia's mother says, wait, I've got to give you a present. Of course, she's doing this through Antonia's sort of translation. And she hands them this little sack with these dried chips in it. And the dried chips, they can't identify what they are. And they say, you know, they say politely, thank you. But then they go home, and Jim's grandmother actually throws them in the fire because she says, I don't know what kind of animal or vegetable this is, but it's foreign and I don't like it. And so she throws it in the fire. And Jim takes a little taste of it before she does that. And of course, it's mushrooms. It's dried mushrooms. And that scene to me in the novel is the sort of perfect example of this tension between cultures. Here is the grandmother who thinks that this is something that is foreign, that is unacceptable, that is indefinable, and in many ways needs to be gotten rid of. And so that is sort of a symbol of what many of the attitudes were in America at that time period. But on the other hand, Cather understands the importance of mushroom folklore in Czech culture. She understands the sort of centrality of that, of mushrooming and you know, that this is the meat of the poor. She gets that. And that's amazing. And it's the kind of thing that an American reader would just sort of pass over without really understanding the two sides of that story, the tension in that story between those two attitudes.
It shows a real insight, doesn't it? I mean, just if I may ask you, because I know that you researched quite a lot about the translation into Czech, I just wonder, I actually, before recording this interview with you, I spoke to my mom, who's a great reader. She's 86 years old and she loves reading all the time. She's never heard of my Antonia, Naše Toníčka. And I feel kind of sad about it. But to be honest, I just Googled it. And Moje Toníčka, I couldn't find it even in antiquariat. Mm-hmm. And I mean,
it's rare.
I'm just leaving it kind of out there in the air. I mean, why it didn't catch on. But if you could just kind of tell our listeners a little bit about the translation into Czech.
So actually, there's been two translations. There is one from 1966 or 67 that's called Moja Antonina, but there's one, the earliest one is 1922, and it's actually the second nation to publish. Czechia, or what was Czechoslovakia then, was the second place to translate a book of Cather's into a foreign language. So the Swedes were first, and then Karel Pellant translates My Antonia, and he renames it. And I think the name is really important, because instead of My Antonia, he calls it Naše Toníčka, our. And there's a very important sort of push-pull in the book about everyone sort of saying, this is My Antonia, and the narrator saying, this is My Antonia, as if they possess her, as if they own her, as if there's an exclusivity about it. And Karel Pellant says, no, she's our Antonia. And there's the publishers wrote in that translation a kind of letter to Cather, an open letter to Cather saying, you know, we're so grateful for you understanding our Bohemians. And then Karel Pellant talks about how important Cather is. Let's see, I've got it written down here, the quote. He says that Antonia is so finely drawn that she will be counted among the most vivid figures of our literature, to be placed on Czech bookshelves next to Babička, to which we always return again and again. I mean, that's saying something in Czech literature. And you're right. I mean, it all but disappears. I mean, I don't have a full copy of Naše Toníčka. You know, there are a couple of copies of it in the States, including one in Texas that Cather actually wrote on, she was aware of it, but she didn't authorize it because, of course, copyright laws at that time were very different. But you're right that now it's hard to find. And it's really kind of sad that it's not retranslated.
That it's not retranslated, that it's not kind of in the general awareness,
yes,
I would say, of Czech.
Yes.
This tremendously, I would say, important role that they played in places like Nebraska, Iowa. There's actually one thing that I wanted to mention. I went to the Library of Congress, And they have some digitized Czech newspapers from the United States in the 1920s. Mm-hmm. And I found out, I can send you the link, that My Antonia in Czech translation, Naše Toníčka, was actually serialized mm-hmm. in, I think it was Baltimore, in one of the Czech papers in the 1920s.
Yes, yes. And I've got part of that serialization. One of ours, the World War I novel, was also serialized in Czechoslovakia in a Czech Legion paper, Legionnaire paper, newspaper. So Czechs at that time were aware of her. I mean, in the 20s, in the 1920s, they were aware of her. But she's just sort of, I don't know why. I can't explain it. It seems a sadness to me. It seems a pity.
It's a pity, isn't it? Yeah, exactly. But since our listeners obviously listen to us in English, I would hope that they can get the book in the American original.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, in the English mm-hmm. original, mm-hmm. rather.
You know, I would say that one of the things that is important is that the story is important here. And listeners can, if they want to, check out the National Willa Cather Center online, which is willacather.org, where they can actually go and virtually visit Annie Sadilac Pavelka and her husband's homestead, their farmstead. They can come to Nebraska and visit in person as well. The National Willa Cather Center has restored and stabilized the home and use it as kind of an interpretive center explaining the notion of Bohemian immigrants or immigrants at large coming to Nebraska, coming to the plains, and their role in that. And so this is actually on the National Historical Registry. And so, in many ways, Antonia, I apologize because for saying it the way I've been saying it, because, of course, this is the way Americans say it, but Antonia has really become a kind of symbol of what that time period was all about.
Obviously, in the 19th century and early 20th century, there were so many nationalities coming to the United States. Irish, mm-hmm. Germans, mm-hmm. Norwegians, Swedes. People from all over the world, Italians, of course, etc.
Right.
What do you think was special about the Czechs or the Bohemians, if there was anything special?
Remember that the Bohemian immigrants and their numbers peaked in 1907, which ironically is exactly when my paternal grandfather came. But their numbers peaked in 1907. And until 1924, when there was legislation limiting immigrant numbers, those numbers across the board of all immigrants were huge. And they were very big in terms of populations of cities. At one point, New York City was talking about how high their percentage of immigrants was. And I think for Bohemians, the Bohemians who came into farming communities were really examples of thrift and excellence and in farming and keeping your farm neat and tidy. I remember my father actually talking all the time about, he would drive through the countryside and he'd say, that field is clean, you know, it doesn't have any weeds in it. That one is not clean. That was very important to them. So, I mean, I don't know if that answers your question. I think that they were very good workers. They were all over the country, of course. I mean, Pittsburgh, there were Slovaks, a lot of Slovaks, some Bohemians, and Moravians. Minnesota, for instance, Nebraska's number one. Today, even today, people of Czech ancestry.
So that was Evelyn Fanda talking about Willa Cather and her novel My Antonia. In the next episode, I will ask Evelyn about her own family story.
I'm very proud of that fact that I am 50% Bohemian and 50% Moravian.
We will definitely get back to that in the next interview.
Yes.
When we will talk about your personal story, which I find always fascinating, you know. I mean, there are so many stories, aren't there, when we speak to our compatriots, be it in Australia or the United States, to kind of whet the appetite of our listeners. Why is it important to talk about it?
Well, for me, it really is about identity. I mean, when I went to college, I really was trying to figure out who I was, for instance, because I'd grown up on this farm. I'd grown up in an ethnic family in a county where there really weren't that many ethnic people. And so I felt that this was something I had to put aside. And as I've grown older, it's become increasingly important to me. I mean, I do Czech genealogy. I do this research. I do lots of research on Americanization and that kind of thing because it's about who I am. I've connected with cousins in Moravia. It's an enrichment to understand the history, to understand my family's part in the history of the nation that I love.
And that brings us to the end of another rich and I hope enlightening episode of Czechast. Well, thank you for tuning in and exploring the deep connections between Czech heritage and the broader world with us. Remember, the stories of the past help us shape our understanding of the present and inspire our future. If you enjoyed this journey, please subscribe to Czechast wherever you listen to your podcasts and consider leaving us a review. I'm Vít Pohanka, and it's been an honor to be your guide through the fascinating world of Czech culture and history. Stay curious, keep exploring, and until next time, naschledanou from Czechast.
Czechast, a podcast in English about all things Czech. Whether you're an English-speaking expat living in Czechia and Slovakia, or a descendant of the Czechs, Moravians, and Slovaks who left for a better life in America, Australia, Britain, or Canada so long ago that you don't speak the language of the old country, this podcast in English is for you.